Well, it's summertime in western Wisconsin, and that means it's time to wet a line. Fishing season is in full swing, and the weather is much more cooperative lately, causing thousands upon thousands of anglers to migrate to their local lakes, bays, rivers, and streams. And in the world of fish management, there's a lot of going on, too, in Wisconsin. And this hour on the West Side Outside, we'll talk about it. As always, I'm joined by the outdoor guys. Joe Knight is an outdoor writer for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram. Good to have you back, Joe.
Thanks for inviting me.
My pleasure. And Dave Carlson is the creator and host of the TV show Northland Adventures. Thanks for stopping by, Dave.
Count this as good fishing time, too.
And I have to mention, you know, we'll get into it a little deeper later, but Dave, congratulations on being inducted into the Wisconsin Broadcasters Hall of Fame.
Thank you very much. It's quite an honor. I was blown away to see it mildly.
Absolutely. I can only imagine. Someday, you know, maybe 50 years from now, I'll be in there. Well,
I think of Hall of Fame material, you know, lots of times they're either dead or done. I'm neither.
That's right. All right, we've also got some special guests for the program, and first, joining us for the first half or so of the program will be Max Walter. He's a fisheries biologist with the DNR, and works in the Hayward area. He also is involved a little bit with fish hatchery in Hayward. Can't talk right now. Max Walter, thank you so much for being on the program.
Hey, thank you very much for having me.
Our pleasure. And joining us after the 5:30 mark will be a man by the name of Bimbo. Dan Gifford is his name, officially in the phone book, and he's from Cameron. He's an expert fly tyer, and he's an inventor of the Bimbo skunk fly that is a favorite among bluegill and crappie fishermen. That is coming up after 5:30. If you have a question or a comment for the outdoor guys, for our DNR fisheries biologist, or for Bimbo coming up, give us a call. The number is 1-800-228-5615. We've got three phone lines wide open for this hour. And it should be a good time. So, first of all, welcome back, guys. Have you been able to get out and enjoy fishing yet, or have you been working all summer long?
Well, sometimes you can do both.
Yeah. Well, if you're an outdoor writer, I imagine you can.
I did have a good morning a week ago using the Bimbo skunk that we were talking about for bluegills, which are quite a bit late this year in spawning, at least from my observation. Everything's late this year.
Right.
Other than that, I've been, every time I want to go fishing somewhere, the water, the rivers are out of their banks or the trout stream. So I've probably done less fishing this spring than in spring and summer than for many years.
I agree with you, Joel. I've been watching the grandkids fish off the dock, and the bluegill action there is pretty good. Anything from the potato chip size, 3 to 4 inches, to some that are a little heavier, maybe up around 7 or 8 inches, and those are the rarity, but the kids sure have a blast doing it, and get them out in the boat every now and then, too. So, yeah, but it's been one of those, you know, you're supposed to go fishing anytime you can, right? And regardless of the weather conditions, but I'll tell you, there's certain times that I've liked to have gone, but man, oh man, the downpours and the cloudy water and the wind, relentless wind, you know, and cool water temperatures. I was out on the Chippewa fishing Basque last week, smallmouth up by Cornell, and the water was just streaking down the channel there, probably only a foot and a half to 2 high up above what the normal for this time of the year. But when we started out at about 9 o'clock in the morning on a sunny day, the water temp was 61 degrees. And when we finished, it was about 67. So the bass, smallmouth, really don't get cranked up until the upper 70s or 80s, you know. And there were no crayfish to be seen. And we caught small bass, 5 inches, up to 14 inches the biggest. And my expectation was for a little bit more. But
that's not bad. I've been afraid to go in the Chippewa River. Usually by now, I'd be out once or twice.
Well, I was in a big boat, but that took some chore, too, to keep it from banging into the shoreline.
And Max, I imagine you're out in the water all the time as a DNR fisheries biologist. You've been able to do any casual fishing?
I do. I do get a chance here and there. And I've had similar experiences to what Joe and Dave were saying. You know, I've had a tough time finding a good day to trout fish when it's not, you know, muddy water screaming past me. But I've been getting out on the lakes and doing some pan fishing, doing some bass fishing. So yeah, it's been a good spring so far.
Of late, Max, I was just going to say there's this debate you've been involved in Northwest Wisconsin and getting more so, it seems like, as every month rolls by, and that's largemouth versus walleye, and it's scientists and biologists are trying to get to the bottom of why walleye numbers are declining in a number of lakes. And as the article I'm looking at from the St. Paul Pioneer Press points out, there's been a walleye bass flip.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the bass lakes are walleye lakes have become bass lakes, bass dominated lakes around the north. And then coming to the rescue here now is Governor Walker's walleye initiative, $13.5 million that is going to be spent putting stocked fish out there, which always raises the debate, why can't we turn to Mother Nature and let her do the job? And not a penny, as I see it, of this $13.5 million is going to be going for habitat work. It's for hatcheries. It's for buying fish if needed. And it seems to be a quick fix. I got you on the griddle here now.
Well, no, you touched on probably the biggest issue we're having up here, particularly in Northwest Wisconsin. And it's basically a shift in the fish community from lakes that were dominated for the last, 60 or 70 years by walleye. You know, walleye dozens per acre, and now, it's very hard to find walleye, and we're finding largemouth bass in places where we've never seen them before, particularly in the numbers we're seeing. So it's been a big community flip, and it's going to be interesting to see if we're going to be able to flip it back to a walleye-dominated lake, which is, of course, what a large majority of anglers want.
Now,
so this fish stocking is, it's one part of that plan, absolutely, and we've been asking for these large fingerling walleyes for a long time to kind of fill in places where we haven't been able to produce natural year classes, but the goal is to get back to natural reproduction.
No, I hate to back it up a little bit, but for those that might not know exactly, what the versus is here, what's the deal? Why are bass taking over? What's happening?
That's really the million-dollar question, and there's a lot of theories out there, and none of them have been proven yet. We do know from other studies that have happened that largemouth bass will prey on young walleye, and if their numbers get great enough, there's certainly some evidence out there that a dense bass population could suppress walleye reproduction. We also have some changes going on in our lakes related to climate, and those certainly favor bass. Warmer water, more weeds, that's bass habitat, not walleye habitat. We've also had, just a climate in Wisconsin of harvesting walleye and catch and release for bass. That's been the case for the last, 20 or 30 years. And we might be starting to see kind of the residual buildup effects of that, where these bass populations have been allowed to become so dense while we continue to harvest walleye at the same rate. We're giving one of those species an unfair advantage when it comes to, the dominant species we see in the fish community.
Hmm. Why large fingerlings, walleye fingerlings for stocking? Why have you been, I think maybe the answer is pretty obvious, but I'd like to hear your explanation.
Yeah.
And when are you going to be putting them in?
Right. The large fingerling walleyes are stocked between 6 to 8 inches long, and we really like that size now because those are tough for predators to eat. We're talking about bass, and we're talking about northern pike primarily. A 6 to 8 inch walleye is a much better chance when you put it into the lake than, say, a 2 to 3 inch walleye. We've been asking for those. We've had really good luck with them in the places that we've tried them so far. Really high survival. They assimilate into the population really well. When they're that big, they can be eating, things like small bluegill and minnows right away instead of having to switch to them later. So that's a product that, all the fish biologists have really been liking, and this walleye initiative is really an effort to deliver more of those to kind of meet the demand that we've all been placing with our hatcheries.
Is this a summer or fall stocking?
Oh, yeah. This is a fall stocking, typically late September, early October. So we hold them in the hatcheries as long as we can, grow them up to that 6 to 8 inch size, and then stock them out in the fall.
Max, what kind of lakes are you going to be stocking these in, lakes that have normally high walleye reproduction?
No, and that's a great point, Joe. Lakes that currently have good walleye reproduction are not lakes that we're looking at to do any stocking. Stocking on top of naturally reproducing populations you know, isn't good for either the stock fish or the natural fish. It just creates an unnecessary amount of competition. So the lakes that we're looking at to do these types of large fingerling walleye stockings are lakes where we've had failed year classes repeatedly, you know, for 5 years or more, where we just do not have young walleye in the system right now, and we haven't been able to produce them. So we need a boost. And then along with that, we're looking to change fishing regulations, try to encourage people to harvest some more small largemouth bass and create the conditions where we can start producing natural walleye year classes again.
You mentioned that this is just one part of the initiative. What are some of the other parts that might not be getting so much attention by the media?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I kind of touched on it in the previous comment, but we're changing fishing regulations. You know, we've had very protective fishing regulations on largemouth bass, the 14-inch statewide minimum, the northern bass zone, things like that. We're now looking at our bass populations and saying, boy, we really don't think they need that much protection, because we have a lot of places where the bass aren't even growing past 14 inches. And so we need to kind of start encouraging harvest of some of these smaller bass, reducing the density of those fish. We're also putting more restrictive regulations on walleye so we can start to build up their numbers a little bit and try and flip the lake back to being a walleye-dominated system. So there's kind of an education outreach component of this, too, and explaining to people why we want them to harvest the bass.
Max, so far, you can change the regulations if you want, but there's still the thing of changing the habits of fishermen.
Yeah.
And I know when I learned to fish, I used to keep every legal bass I caught, and then I learned, well, no, we throw those back. That's kind of the culture. And so you're going to have to retrain people like me who've grown up with this idea.
Are
you having any luck in that so far?
Well, I think we have been, yeah. And for some people, you know, this might be the second time they've had to be retrained. You know, some people, you know, had to catch on to catch and release for largemouth bass, and now we're saying, okay, we need to be practicing what we call selective harvest. You know, we're not trying to eradicate bass. We're not trying to, you know, make them evil or the scapegoat or anything. We're trying to target a specific size range, and that's small largemouth bass, typically less than 14 inches. And those are good harvest size fish. They're not the ones that the bass tournament and, you know, the big recreational bass guys are looking for. We still want people to release those. But by taking off the minimum length limit on a lake, we can start to knock down the bass density, particularly of the, you know, the less desirable sizes.
Have DNR biologists been pushing for habitat work and perhaps being not heard on this point? Because I'm sure that there are habitat issues involved here too that are should be considered. Are they not?
And you know, on the habitat front, it's a little less black and white. We are doing some things related to habitat that certainly could affect this bass walleye issue. Fish sticks, which are kind of adding trees basically to shallow water areas. That's something that we've looked at, and we think, you know, that may be able to help this issue by creating habitat that the bass prefer. It might keep them away from the deeper water and keep them from feeding on walleye. So that's one thing that's being tried in a few places. But kind of, you know, the big habitat issues, water temperature, vegetation, things like that, are not ones that we can easily or cheaply reverse. So habitat's a consideration, but it's not one that we've really moved on a ton at this point.
Spawning grounds are being lost to unkind lakeshore development too, are they not?
Oh, absolutely, and that has been and will be an ongoing effort to try and, you know, encourage lakeshore owners to be, you know, responsible and to keep buffer zones when trees fall in the water, to leave them there and basically just to have natural shorelines. But we have a lot of lakes up here with really, really fantastic walleye spawning habitat still, and they're just not producing year classes. And that's kind of led us to think that this is more of a fish community issue than a habitat issue. But I'm sure there are plenty of cases out there where, you know, more could be done on the habitat front, and that might make a difference.
Aren't there some lakes that never had walleyes that you want them in now, and they've been in recent times but not historically? And the same for bass, that some lakes were never that hold bass now. They years ago may never have had them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a part of this issue is some lakes where, you know, you couldn't catch a largemouth bass 30 years ago. They were there, but they were in such a low density. Now there's bass everywhere. And then there's certainly some lakes where we've stocked walleye and, you know, tried to create a walleye lake where there previously had not been one. But a big part of this effort, and, you know, with this walleye initiative and all these fish becoming available, a big part of this effort for the biologists is to look at all our lakes and take a hard look and say, is this a bass lake? Should we be managing for bass? Is that what the species that's best suited for this habitat? Or should we be trying to manage it as a walleye lake? And the things that factor in there, of course, you know, spawning habitat for the two species, water clarity is a big one, depth is a big one. If you have a very shallow, weedy lake, you know, you're going to be fighting Mother Nature, you know, every step of the way if you're trying to turn it into a walleye lake. So,
tribal spearfishing not a factor in this?
You know, the amount of adult harvest, both from the tribal and the sport angling side, is completely sustainable. It's that we just don't have young fish coming in behind those adults right now to keep the populations going. So right now this is a recruitment issue more so than a harvest issue.
With that, I want to remind our listeners that we're talking about fishing. Specifically, we're talking right now with Max Wolter, a DNR fisheries biologist in the Hayward area, about the walleye initiative to get more walleyes in northwest Wisconsin lakes. Also joined by the outdoor guys, Dave Carlson of Northland Adventures and Joe Knight, outdoor writer for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram. If you've got a question or a comment for any of these fine gentlemen, give us a call. The number is 1-800-228-5615. What do you think about the plan to attack the low walleye numbers in northwestern Wisconsin lakes with just adding more fish, adding more money to fisheries? The number, 1-800-228-5615.
Max, eventually we're going to be talking to Bimbo, Dan Gifford, about bluegills. We'll let him be the light approach to it. You're going to be the heavy on this. Now, how are you coming in organizing your the ground, the forces for the bluegill management plan that the state is putting together?
Things are coming along pretty well. This last winter, as I'm sure a lot of your listeners are aware, you know, we did a very large statewide survey of panfish anglers, found out what they liked and what they didn't like about what's currently going on with our panfisheries. And right now what we're doing is we're taking those results, we're taking a very close look at them, finding out, you know, the direction that the people of Wisconsin want us to head. We're assembling some stakeholder groups of private citizens, folks that are fishing guides, resort owners, just, you know, panfishing enthusiasts. And we're all going to get together in a room and, you know, we're going to start to hash out this plan, which is going to be the department's direction for panfish management. It's going to lay out how people in my position, you know, fish biologists, can improve panfishing.
How can the public keep track of that? Excuse me.
We do have a page on the DNR website, and if you search panfish plan, that will come up. And we're going to continue to post updates and information, and the plan will be made available, I believe, this fall for public review, and so folks can kind of look at, you know, what's included in there, what types of strategies we think are going to be effective to, you know, produce more panfish in some cases, but in most cases, you know, the interest is going to be producing bigger panfish.
I am definitely the layman here. I've read that the panfish had been treated like the forgotten middle child in that there was no management plan statewide.
Yeah.
Is that ridiculous? I mean, was it just that there was no, it was never needed, or was it just that they were overlooked?
Well, I think it could have been helpful to have one of these a long time ago. Panfish are just such that we kind of assumed that they would always be there and they would always take care of themselves because they reproduce very well. You know, they're not a trophy fish like walleye or muskie that need a lot of attention to get to really big sizes. I guess forgotten's kind of the good word, but we are thinking now that because panfish are so important, I mean, they're the number one fish in the state that people go after. You know, we should have a plan, and we should be doing whatever we can to maximize our panfish potential.
If I could, I'll go to the phones now. We've got a couple of callers on. Well, we're actually filled up with calls, but keep trying if you can't get through. We're going to go back and touch back on the walleye issue real quick here. And the first caller is coming from St. Croix, and Brian is on the air. Brian, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Thanks. I just had a question for the fisheries biologist on if they plan to stock all these fish, $13.5 million worth, how do they plan on protecting them from tribal harvest? Because in this area, there's a definite pattern, and that pattern is that when those fish get to be an even level, which is in our protected slot for them, say 15 to 18 inches, when we start really, really catching them in numbers on a lake after they've been stocked, the very next year they get wiped out. And, I mean, you can look on the Great Lakes Fish, there's a Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Council website, and they'll actually post what lakes are harvested, and it's not a coincidence that those match up the lakes that were stocked a number of years ago that have eatable-sized fish in them. So I just like his input on that comment.
All right. Thanks a lot, Brian. Max Walter.
Well, you know, that's always kind of a hot-button issue in the area, but we have a shared fishery, and we have a system that's set up to apportion the fish to both the sport anglers and tribal harvesters. And there are limits on these things, and I think a lot of people don't understand that tribal members go out with a permit, and they have a specific quota of fish, and that is set by both the DNR and GLIFWIC, which is the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, which the caller mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of work that went into developing that system and making sure that it's sustainable. But again, it is a shared fishery, and they have their right to their portion of the fish. I think saying that they wipe out a fishery would be inaccurate. We do keep very good tabs on these things. But, yeah, that's always going to be a portion of the fish that are harvested in Wisconsin. And part of the walleye initiative addresses that, and it actually gives money to tribal hatcheries. A lot of anglers don't know that the tribes stock a lot of walleye into these lakes. In some cases, you know, in a lot of lakes, it's comparable to what the DNR stocks, and that's for their members, you know, or to account for, you know, some of the fish that their members harvest.
Let's go down to Cumberland. We'll get another walleye and bass question in, and then we'll move back into the panfish territory. We have Steve on the line. Steve, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call on a great program. Just a comment, I think I appreciate the discussion about walleyes versus bass and the changes that have occurred over time where bass or walleye lakes are changing to bass lakes. Although I think we should not look a gift horse in the mouth here. We got some great bass fishing out there. I don't want to lose that on lakes that are marginal walleye lakes, and I think we need to be careful and identify the lakes that have great walleye potential while yet taking advantage of the decent bass fishing we have now, protect those upper size classes in bass. I like the comment about protecting the 14-inch and larger and harvesting the smaller fish. I think that's important to maintain a quality fishery while yet providing eating fish, fish that are probably the safest to eat from a toxicity standpoint as well. So I appreciate your work here, and I look forward to hearing more on the radio. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. And there you go, Max. You know, walleye is a very a favorite fish among a lot of people, but a lot of people like the fighting bass too.
Yeah, Steve makes a great point there. You know, we don't want to sacrifice some of the great bass fisheries we have now. The issue we're seeing, particularly in some of these lakes that were formerly walleye-dominated, is that the bass have come on so strong that they're actually affecting their own growth. We have lakes now where, you know, it's very rare to grow a 14, 15-inch fish. And so harvesting some of these smaller bass is probably not only going to be good for the walleye, but it's also going to be good for the bass in those lakes.
Hmm.
And I like his point as well about, you know, we want to maintain kind of a trophy recreational-type fishery. We want to have large bass in the system. Those are fun to catch, absolutely. And so harvesting some more of those smaller fish is going to help on both of those fronts. And I should also mention, you know, while we're on the air here and we have a moment, we don't see any issues of smallmouth bass, and we have some of the best smallmouth bass fishing anywhere in the world, and we want to make sure that we're protecting that. We're mostly seeing issues with largemouth bass, which is interesting.
All right. Well, let's take our first break here on the west side. We're talking right now with Max Walter. He's a DNR fisheries biologist in the Hayward area. We've also got the outdoor guys, Joe Knight and Dave Carlson. And when we return from the break, we're going to welcome to the program Bimbo, Dan Gifford. He's an expert fly tyer, and he's the inventor of the Bimbo skunk, a very popular fly among people that are going for bluegills and crappies. So stay tuned. This is the West Side Outside. You're listening to the West Side Outside on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this evening. Reminder for all of our listeners, if you haven't heard any of the promos, the West Side will be moving time slots. Starting July 8th, we're going to move from our normal time, 5 p.m. Thursday. We will be July 8th on the air at 10 a.m. on Monday and every week after that. Mondays at 10 a.m. for the West Side. We've got a lot of schedule changes coming on WPR, and we hope that everyone can bear with us as we make the change. Right now, we're talking about fishing during the summer edition of the West Side Outside. We've got the outdoor guys. Joe Knight is an outdoor writer for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram, and Dave Carlson is the host of Northland Adventures, also a WBA Hall of Famer. We'll get into that in a little bit. We're joined on the phone from his office in Hayward by Max Walter. He is a DNR fisheries biologist in the Hayward area. And now we welcome to the program a man that goes by the name of Bimbo. Dan Gifford, as he's officially known, he's a fly tying expert from the Cameron area, and he's the inventor of the Bimbo Skunk. Bimbo, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, and thank you for having me on your show.
It's my pleasure.
How you doing, Dan? Dave Carlson.
Pretty good, Dave. Congratulations. That's quite an honor.
Yeah,
thank you.
Absolutely.
Well, you should be in the Hall of Fame of fly tires, I'll tell you, if there is such a thing.
So
lots of them out better than myself.
Do you want to describe the Bimbo Skunk? Unfortunately, we're on radio, so we can't hold one up for people to look at, Bimbo.
It's pretty easy. Basically, it's a woolly worm. Like Ted Peck said, it's a woolly worm on steroids. it has a black body, black hackle, a chartreuse stripe or a pink stripe down the back, and then the weighted one, which I started tying when my kids were too young to fly fish, features an 80th ounce jig head. And that comes in three colors. But one of the things that really makes it work good and people don't understand is I leave a little piece of red thread hanging out the tail end of it.
Mm.
And out the thorax, I tie red also. And I discovered that by accident when I ran out of black thread.
Well, thanks for being with us. We're just now, I'm sure you were listening, getting into the discussion about the creation of a statewide panfish management plan. And I don't know if the guys had any other questions. We kind of went off track. We had some callers. We're getting back to the walleye discussion that we had earlier. But I guess, what are your thoughts on this management plan or the attempts to create one? Is it about time, or do you have any concerns, Bimbo?
What I like is they're paying attention to panfish. Panfish is our bread and butter, especially for the youth. You know, you have a lot of towns around where the kids, you know, I grew up where I could walk a block and catch a bluegill. You have a lot of towns around the state where the kids, you see them riding bike 5 miles and then end up trout fishing or bass fishing. They don't have panfish around. And, you know, my theory is you keep kids fishing, you keep them out of trouble. So It'd be nice to see not only the DNR, but maybe some local organizations try to get some kind of pond or some kind of local creek or something where they can get panfish in near town for kids.
Dan, I don't know, Max, are you still on the line?
Yep,
yes, sir.
Max is still there.
Maybe between Max and Dan, Max first, because he's got to leave us here after a bit for another engagement. But what kind of spring are we seeing for the panfish and the bluegills? I mean, I've heard so many stories, late spawn, no spawn, deep spawn, shallow spawn, cold water, warm water. Just what's your take on it, Max first, then Bimbo?
Late spawn is probably the most accurate way to describe it. Of course, what a tale of 2 years here. Between last year, everything was so far ahead, and this year things are so far behind. But things have gone fairly normal, just a week, you know, 2 weeks behind thereabouts. Bluegill in a lot of places are spawning or are just finishing up spawning. But we did see a few instances where some of the fish may not have spawned. And we saw that, I think, on crappies on the Chippewa flowage. And that's not to say that all the fish didn't spawn, but some fish just were thrown, I think, by the strange weather patterns. And what they'll do in those instances is they will reabsorb their eggs and try again next year. And that might sound like a scary thing, but we almost never have a shortage of small panfish in the lake. That's not really an issue for management. So we're not going to be missing a year class or anything like that, but the behavior was a little bit different, and people might have noticed that in their fishing.
With regards to the management plan, are there any talks of bag limits for panfish on certain lakes? Because I remember when I was younger, 25 fish. It was basically all the fish you can catch, you know, all the ones that were worth filleting and frying up. But is that going to change?
Too soon to say. I will say this, you know, bag limits are one of our most effective tools. It's something that has been shown to work to improve size structure of panfish in other states and in studies. But we're really trying not to jump to any conclusions here. We want to make sure that, you know, the anglers of the state of Wisconsin are being heard, and we want to make sure that they want us to head in a certain direction. We don't want to just, you know, fly off willy-nilly and assume to know what they want. So that's kind of the stage we're at in the panfish management plan, is getting feedback, you know, finding out what direction the anglers want us to head in. And then if we decide that the changes, either large scale on a statewide basis or, you know, more localized, if we decide those changes are needed, then we're going to come in and look at different tools like bag limits, size limits, habitat, seasons, all the things that we have available to try and make fishing better.
Bimbo, what have the fishermen been telling you about this spring's action, even those who don't use your fly? And then the other question, what would you tell people like Max Walter about a panfish management plan? Two questions.
Well, the panfish, it's really been weird this year. We were catching them May 7th, just as fast as you could throw in. Last year it was March 22nd, and there was no eggs, no spawn appeared in these fish. And they bit real well. Then all of a sudden they went to just an afternoon bite. Then they started getting the spawn in. And my concern was also that the water was going to warm up since it was so late in the year. It was going to get hot and warm up too fast and pass up the window, their spawning window. And the other question, which was it, Dave?
What would you advise Max Walter and as they formulate this management plan? What do you think the people want the DNR to hear? From what
I would like
hear.
To see, you know, lake by lake, and I don't believe it would be very hard to do because they can manage trout crick by crick in different categories. You know, maybe a 10 or 15 bluegill limit and the rest crappies and rock bass, whatever have you. But I think a statewide one, 10 would be not, I don't think it'd be suitable.
We're just about out of time as far as Max Walter is concerned. We're going to have to let him go here. Real quick, is there any opportunities for anglers to still get their comments into the DNR, and how do they do it?
Well, you know, you can always place your comment, an email to the local fisheries biologist. I would go on the Wisconsin DNR website, search panfish plan. There's some information you can read there. I believe there's some places where people can give feedback. And then we're also going to have some more opportunities when we present the panfish management plan, and we are going to be, you know, drafting a handful of citizens from around the state to assist us with, you know, the actual nuts and bolts of putting it together and writing it. So, the public's going to be involved the whole time. So.
All right. Well, Max Walter, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck with your softball game.
Thank you. It was really a pleasure talking to all y'all.
Max Walter is a DNR fisheries biologist in the Hayward area, originally from Chippewa Falls, and now he's working his dream job up there. So congratulations, and thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Hey, good luck, everybody fishing out there.
Yeah.
All right.
And with that, we're down to three. I want to remind the listeners that they can call in with their questions or comments for Dave, Joe, or Bimbo. The number is 800-228-5615. We're talking now about bluegills, panfish, in the management plan, but I imagine that the conversation can kind of drift in any direction at this point. We're kind of freestyling. Number 800-228-5615.
Bimbo, I've got to ask. I'm going to put you on the spot here now. Other than your fly, what would be another bluegill fly or crappie fly you would use if you suddenly found yourself without skunks?
I tied a crappie one, Armin Block from Cameron tied it years ago. We called it the Doc Block Crappie Killer. It's basically a bare hook, white fur coming back, and a little red head. And the crappies would love that early in the year when they're in around the brush and the stumps. And the other one would be, I got an offshoot that I use. It's my original one was years ago. It's called the Bimbo Bug, and it had a red tail and a chartreuse butt and a black body. And I just talked to a guy yesterday that said his buddy's catching lots of trout on it. So
what
I might
about,
have to go back.
What about bees and spiders and gnats?
Bees and spiders, they're absolutely terrific. And, you know, you watch sometimes, and when they're hitting the surface, them spiders are absolute killers. There's no doubt about it.
I'm partial to a yellow popper. I'll throw my... But the other day when I was out... Yeah, the other day when I was out, there was a little chop on the water, and the popper wasn't doing it, so I had to go to a skunk, get down to the fish.
It's a thrill watching them bluegills smash a popper.
We
used to do it when we were kids.
I've talked to you a number of times, and you often make reference to fishing from shore. You don't need a boat, that you can move around and fish really quite well from shore with a fly rod and your fly or anybody else's, and yes, you will catch bluegills and crappies. So what's the technique?
Well, on a fly rod, most generally we're letting it sink slow, and I have used the weighted one almost exclusively the last 2 years. And the weighted one, like I said, it's nice. One thing from shore where you can't throw a fly rod, you can throw a spinning rod. My brother and I went fishing yesterday, and he was using a fly rod, and I was using a spinning rod with the weighted one. So, you know, you can use it for either one, but most generally I found this year, all year has been slow movement. Some year, like remember when we went last year, you were jerking it rather fast and getting good action. But if you did that now, it seems like, you know, it wouldn't hit on it.
Hmm. What are some of your favorite bluegill lakes? I know the bluegills are just about everywhere, but
that's
now I'm really...
for personal information.
Yeah, now I'm really digging in there.
Prairie Lake is the whole chain of lakes at Chautauqua is a bluegill factory. That is one reason I would, you know, not like to see the limit go to 10, because that supported extreme fishing pressure when the limit was 50. Then it was cut to 25, and we still have great numbers and high quality, and I'm afraid if it was cut to 10, that would hurt that lake.
Hmm. Well, let's go to the phones. We've got a caller joining us now from Augusta. Dave is on the line. Dave, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Carlson and Mr. Knight.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing, Dave? This is Dave from Augusta, and I've got my question regards to high-capacity wells that are being put in the area around Augusta, Trumbull County. My concern is the water level and water quality and quantity. I know that Minnesota has just passed HF 976, which is a bill set to designed to protect cold water waterways, streams and such, giving the DNR and high-capacity well authorities the right to deny a permit if it's within a mile of a trout stream. Do you think something like that would be beneficial in Wisconsin? I know I certainly do, to help improve and protect these damaged waterways.
That's a good question. Let's go. These guys are the reporters, so I'm interested to see what kind of stand they'll make on it. Joe Knight.
There is a study going on right now up in Chippewa County where they're monitoring two small trout streams that are near high-capacity wells associated with sand mines or frac sand mining operations.
Mm-hmm. That's still years off. I mean, the results,
Right? They're getting data now, yeah. Yeah, it's a cooperation with the companies and with the state geologists and with the county staff up there, too. So that's kind of an interesting study. I think 1 mile might be a hard sell in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
with how many trout streams do we have, 15,000? That would be one way of, restricting sand mines in the state, but certainly in western Wisconsin, that would make it very hard to locate a sand mine. I know that has been a concern down there. I know there was a well on High Crush, that high cap well that was not permitted like it was supposed to be, and that was actually fairly close to Bridge Creek, which is a trout stream, as you know. I guess it's good that people are watching this issue.
Dave Carlson. Well, I think that's the key, is to keep watching the issue, keep watching the activities. I'm thinking of last year, there were some major rains that came and caused some mm-hmm. of the holding ponds at a few two sand mines operations to fail, and there was some pollution that occurred. And those cases, as I spoke to recently, the former DNR point person on that, Tom Wallace, those cases are still in a matter of search. They're looking into they have not decided whether or not to file charges, I'm pick up what the public is talking about on high capacity wells. When I see what's taking place in the Central Sands in Wisconsin, thousands of wells over there for agriculture. On top of that, the vast amounts of water used by the frac sand industry now and down the road. There also have been and no doubt will continue to be proposals to for bottling purposes for wells.
Yeah. We're getting a little off task here, but there was some language stuck into the budget bill that would make it harder for citizens to appeal a permit of high cap wells.
And as I understand, if the governor signs it, that will become law, but it can be challenged for the next year. There's a 1 year period that after it takes effect, it can still be challenged. Mm. So I probably no doubt the governor is not going to veto that.
With that, let's take our final break. We're going to come back and we're going to talk, get back onto the fishing subject. We could go for hours, I'm sure, talking about frac sand mining, and I've done a number of shows on it.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
We've got more coming, by the way, folks. But right now we're talking about fishing, specifically bluegill management. We've got Bimbo on the program. He's the inventor of the Bimbo skunk, famous fly used for crappie and bluegill. And other fish as well. We've also got Dave Carlson and Joe Knight, the outdoor guys, on the program. This is the West Side Outside. We'll be back in just a bit. This is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. That's the West Side Outside Summer Edition. We're joined by the outdoor guys, Dave Carlson. I almost said Dave Knight. Dave Carlson is the host of Northland Adventures, a syndicated TV program you see locally here on WQOW. We also have Joe Knight. He's the outdoor editor for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram. And we're also joined by Dan Gifford, also known as Bimbo. He is the inventor of the Bimbo skunk fly that's used for bluegill and crappie fishing. He's also just a hell of a guy and an expert fly tyer in general from Cameron. If you've got a question or comment for any of the people on the program, give us a call at 800-228-5615. That number again, 1-800-228-5615. Got off topic a little bit there with the sand mines, but that is a concern, the water drawdown. But this year has been an especially wet year. I'm wondering, is that having, besides the late spring, Bimbo, are you seeing any other changes with bluegill or panfish behavior because of the all this rain we're getting?
Well, not really. Because of the rain, I'm sure it's going to affect like smallmouth and muskies and stuff in your river systems. But the lakes appear to be coming up, and it seems the beds I have seen have now been, you know, close to shore, and they're having, with the lakes up, they have more habitat and structure and brush and stuff to be around, which is nice. Hmm. Some of your lakes, which maintain a certain level, it's not been a problem, but like where my cabin is, the lake is real low, and now coming up, there's grass growing, there's brush around it, so it creates a little cover for the fish for spawning.
Right. As soon as they're out of the egg, the young fry have a place to hide. Maybe better survival.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite Bimbo story? Somebody just blew you away with a story. They said, I tried one of your flies, Dan, and you take it from there.
There's so many of them. Some guys I worked with, they went out, and the guy with the Bimbo skunk, they caught 50 fish, and the guy with the Bimbo skunk caught 48 out of the 50. Two guys.
Nice.
But I get lots of stories like that.
Did you get a testimonial out of him for the packaging?
Yeah. Should have.
He has them taped on the wall where he ties the flies.
Yeah.
One problem with Bimbo, he's a victim of his own success, so he has to tie flies now, and he can't go fishing as much.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to figure out how to put a vise in my boat.
I know you work with kids, too, at the excellent Rod and Gun Club's Youth Fishing Day. You still enjoy that, don't you? Sharing what
That's
you know?
Absolutely fabulous, Dave. I'd like to see, and I'd like to put a challenge to other clubs to do this. You know, it's known fact that kids that fish are a lot less trouble. And these fourth graders that come up here, we get letters and thank you cards and lots of feedback, and it's just tremendous. We usually run around 100 through here, and it's amazing how much they enjoy it. Of course, naturally, they like getting on to school also.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some of them that will tell us, we at the end of the program, we give him a fish fry, and then we give him a rod and reel and some small baits. And there's a lot of them that will say that they would have never fished if it wouldn't have been for that. You know, and there's so many sportsmen's clubs out there that are looking for projects to do. We just love to see them. I know up in Spooner, they're starting it now also.
Very good. Go ahead, Joe Nance.
Yeah, let me add to that a little. We just had a project out of Beaver Creek where we had kids in it for a morning, and they tied their own flies. No bimbo skunks, but a rubber spider and a yellow popper. And then they got a crash course in fly casting, and we took them out to a little pond, and everyone was able to catch a fish on the fly they just tied. So
Let's go back to the phone lines. We've got probably the final call of the evening since we're getting close to the top of the hour, but we're going to go to Weyerhauser. I hope I pronounced that right. And we've got David on the line. David, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
What's on your mind?
Good program here. I was told to call in. Bimbo, you know my dad, Denny Arc, but he had a question that he wanted to ask, and we've talked about this as a family, and one of the things that we see are the other forgotten panfish, the perch, and the bag limits that go along with them. There's lots of lakes that we feel the bag limits should be a lot higher than they are, and some where they, you know, should be maybe unlimited. But the predator fish of the panfish, the perch, and to take that a step further, I'm 40 years old. Most of my friends have no idea how to get the Y bones out of a northern, and so for that reason, they don't fish them. And we're leaving a lot of those predator fish in there as well. And I think maybe some education on how to fillet your fish would probably be a good thing. And I'll make one last comment. Joe Flater told me that Bimbo guarantees all of his skunks, and if you don't catch any fish, that he'd buy you a beverage down at the Ponda, and I'll take that answer off the air.
Thanks, David.
That's okay.
Is that true?
That's it. You've got a guarantee on your package, don't you, Joe? Bimbo?
Yes, yeah, you betcha. you know, one thing with northerns, what I do with the small northerns is people don't realize, if you take them, flay them out, take the ribs out, and run them through a meat grinder and add a little bit of lemon juice and garlic salt or lemon pepper and maybe a tablespoon of shore lunch, and you make patties. They're just as good as a bluegill, if not better.
Wow. Sure.
And you can run the Y bones right through, and it's amazing.
It's my wife's favorite fish, the northern.
Pickled or just generally?
No, deep fried.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and second that. Something. Yeah, they're underrated. They don't get any respect. If you can get the Y bones out, there's a way.
We did a story on exactly what Bill Bimbo was talking about. A friend of mine, Bill Demlo, up at Conover, Wisconsin, had a pike patty recipe we shared with viewers, and we were literally inundated with email requests. How can I get copies of that recipe for making pike patties? And he ground them up as well.
Okay. I've tried that for suckers. Have you tried it for suckers, Bimbo?
Yes, you betcha. Yeah, it's good.
They also have Y bones in that are.
Yeah.
Lots of them.
Huh.
Well, back to Dave's view on the perch, too. Yeah. You know, perch is not spoken of, but, you know, you'll get some lakes where you can catch hundreds and hundreds of them. They're real small. And the next lake, you'll get nice ones. And too bad we didn't have Max on the line to give us his view.
Right. Well, gentlemen, we've just got about a minute left. Any final thoughts?
I want to thank you, gentlemen, for having me on here. It was an honor.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Thanks for joining us. You added some real color and fun to the conversation.
You're part of this fishing heritage for the state and the Midwest too. I'm sure everybody that has tried them likes them. and they thank you.
Mm-hmm. And Dave, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but again, congratulations on being inducted into the Wisconsin Broadcasters Hall of Fame.
Well, that is it's a tremendous honor, and it goes to a team of people who I've worked with over the past 30-some years, people who support you on and off the camera, and obviously the most important are people like Bimbo and hundreds more like them who share their stories, make it possible for me to do what I've done. Thank you to them. It's their honor.
Absolutely.
They can share in the award as much as me.
Congratulations, Dave. Well deserved.
Thanks to everyone for listening to the program, all the great calls we had. Another reminder, next week we're going to be off, but starting July 8th, that's a Monday, we will be starting the West Side at 10 in the morning. July 8th, 10 in the morning, the West Side. Remember, and you'll be hearing all kinds of promos about it. Thanks to Dave Carlson, Joe Knight, Bimbo, and Max Walter. It was a great conversation. We'll chat again in a couple of weeks.